This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, editor of the website TV Worth Watching, sitting in for Terry Gross. Today's show is devoted to Toni Morrison, one of the most celebrated writers of our time, who died Monday. She was 88 years old. Morrison won a Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 1988 for her novel Beloved, about a former slave looking back on her life after the Civil War. In 1993, she became the first African-American woman to win the Nobel Prize for Literature. In 2012, President Obama awarded Morrison the nation's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And in 2015, she won the Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Book Critics Circle. Today, we're going to feature three of Toni Morrison's conversations with Terry Gross, covering three different decades. And we're going to start with the earliest of the three. An interview from 1987, when she had just written Beloved, the novel for which she won the Pulitzer Prize. Beloved is set in 1873, after the Civil War. It's about escaped and emancipated slaves who are trying to build new lives but are haunted by the past. The main character, Sethi, lives with the ghost of her 2-year-old baby girl. Sethi slit her baby's throat 18 years earlier rather than let her be recaptured into slavery. Her ghost is known as Beloved, the one word that was printed on her tombstone. Toni Morrison told Terry how she prepared herself emotionally to write about slavery.
Oh, I always suspected that I didn't have the emotional stability to live in that world for the 3 or 4 years, however long it would take to examine it. So I did it, I suppose, the way they did it. Which was a little bit at a time. Because if you start out to write a book about slavery, you are probably already lost. Because it's big and it's long. And you discover how long 200 years is. Not 5 years, not 10, but 200. So that you have to have an anchor or a mooring. And the mooring is a group. Of characters whom you are caring about very deeply. But you couldn't tell yourself, or I couldn't tell myself, that I was writing a book about slavery, because I would have drowned in that.
I think there have been a lot of books and movies that have actually really trivialized slavery, or where slavery becomes the backdrop for, you know, a romantic story or something like that. Did you feel in advance of sitting down to write this book that there were certain traps that you had to avoid in order to really get to the truth of the experience?
Yeah. I think that was part of the fear, trying to avoid the routine treatment. And I'm included in this group. Everybody thinks you sort of know all about it. But until you project into it, most of the information is so sensational, so exotic, so alien, and so pathological that it's difficult to grasp. And the fact is that most slave stories that focus on the slaves focus on them as the pathological ones, and never focus on the pathology in which they live and in which they are exercising everything they know about being human in order to maintain that position. So that the trivial treatments of slave stories, sometimes as written and sometimes as filmed, is as though this was a kind of, as you say, scene in which other things of infinitely more interest than the lives of the slaves were going on.
I think a lot of children who grew up in families of Holocaust survivors, or families in which there was, you know, a history of slavery someplace, get almost parables told to them about what could happen and why you have to live life a certain way to, you know, protect yourself against certain evils, and how you have to rise above the horrors that were inflicted on your grandparents or whatever. Did you get lectures like that from your parents?
No, I didn't. I got other messages from them which were much more valuable, because those are very negative, the ones you just recited. It's undue burdens, as though I'm somehow responsible for all of that. What they did, which I found really quite healthy, was they assumed, without ever articulating it, that we were capable and quite bright and in some way morally superior to those who had degraded themselves by trying to degrade us. They seemed to feel that, you know, there were rich people or there were white people or there were wicked people who really had a lot of answering to do for themselves. And we were not like that. So I always felt very special. And I've always felt, for purposes of, you know, xenophobia doesn't work, but I always thought that we were on a higher plane than other people. Not because there was fear out there, not because white people could make me into something less, because they never believed that was the case. What they could do would be to kill me or maim me, but they could never make me be without quality. And that was so much a part of my upbringing and everybody else I knew in that town, and we were very, very poor people, that it took me years to be able to articulate what it was that made me feel like I belonged in this place. And it was this, rather than giving me all these sort of sermonizing about terror. In other words, I was not afraid.
But you had a lot of self-respect.
Yeah, because
that's what this was about, that was, building self-respect.
Yeah. But it wasn't, you must have self. I hear people say,
that's right.
you are somebody. You really are good.
Yeah,
I mean, you know.
That helps, right.
And then people say, oh, yeah, but then maybe it's a possibility that I'm not. But they were not surprised at superior work.
Were you the first person in your family to go to college?
No.
Really?
Mm-mm. I had an uncle who went to Ohio State.
So it wasn't a big symbolic thing for you to go?
It was a big economic problem for me to go, and so shaky, money being so scarce, that my mother took a job to help out. My father had two, and more often than not, three jobs in order to take care of us, but I remember them saying, look, we can guarantee you 1 year. After that, we'll see. So I went away feeling very blessed about the fact that there was a year available to me, but not ever believing that I would have a second year or be able to pay for a second year. And I also worked, but, you know, things were very different then.
Toni Morrison speaking to Terry Gross in 1987, the year her novel Beloved was published. It would win the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction.